incident that we're going to discuss here that happened in 1843 is generally now believed to be, and I'm convinced, that it was a hoax. And so perhaps that's the most difficult of the two to deal with, because there are those who believe that Joseph Smith thought these were real. I personally don't believe that for reasons that I will explain during our presentation today. A little background's in order. The Kinderhook incident that we're going to discuss here that happened in 1843 is generally now believed to be, and I'm convinced, that it was a hoax. And so perhaps that's the most difficult of the two to deal with, because there are those who believe that Joseph Smith thought these were real. I personally don't believe that for reasons that I will explain during our presentation today. A little background's in order. The Kinderhook plates were six bell-shaped plates, thin metal plates, that were bound together by a wire, and on each one of these plates was inscribed different characters. And years after the fact, which is the only thing that sort of makes the comment that they were definitely forgeries that brings any real question to that. Many years after the fact, there was a guy named Mr. Fugate who described how he and a few of his friends had perpetrated this hoax. And what they said was that there were several who had planned on digging in a Pike County Indian mound, or ancient mound, as they were known at the time. And when they heard that the Mormons were going to be doing the digging, and they, of course, knew about Joseph Smith and the gold plates, they decided they would pull a prank. And they cut six bell-shaped plates out of metal and made up some characters, which they inscribed on these plates, and they bound them together with a wire. And when the people went home for the day who had been doing the digging, they went there at night, dug down a good 6 or 8 feet deeper, placed these plates under some rock, and filled it back up to the depth where the digging had occurred. That's the claim that was made. Now, you might say, well, couldn't the person who said that, Mr. Fugate, have been telling a lie? Well, possibly, except that modern metallurgy has been used by metallurgists who are in the know to decipher the kind of metal that was in these plates. And indeed, it's consistent with metal that was available in the 1830s and 40s and 50s. And so this is not some kind of metal that was hundreds or thousands of years before the time of Joseph Smith. This was metal that was made, that was smelted during the time of Joseph Smith's life. And because of that, it's quite certain that these six bell-shaped plates were not true. That brings us to the next point. There are many who say that Joseph Smith was fooled by these, hence he could not have been a prophet. To which I reply, nothing could be further from the truth. One of the things that is often pointed to when that discussion takes place is that pages, actually, if I remember right, 7 pages in the Times and Seasons, which was the official publication for the LDS Church at the time. This would be a little bit like the Ensign magazine or something close to that. Seven pages at the time were devoted to the Kinderhook Plates incident. Now, that in and of itself, to me, doesn't mean that somehow people were hoodwinked. There are two reasons for that. The first one is that over a year earlier, starting in 1842, Joseph Smith no longer was the ongoing editor of the Times and Seasons, and the Times and Seasons had all kinds of things in it, some of which was wonderful and edifying, and some of which was kind of speculative, and this I would toss into the speculative category. I would also point out that there were a number of other contemporary publications at the time, called the Quincy Whig being one, and some others that had lengthy articles themselves. And so there were other contemporary publications on these six Kinderhook plates that showed that people had great interest in them and whether or not they were authentic. One of the next things that is often brought up to try to tar Joseph Smith as someone who's not really a prophet, who's a fraud, is a letter dated May 2nd of 1843 by a little girl named Charlotte Haven. And in that letter, she says that the Kinderhook plates were shown to Joseph Smith and that he determined that they were genuine and tried to translate them. Now, the reason that I do not believe that that's an accurate statement of events is because she has other details in her letter that are inaccurate. The other reason is that she did not personally have any direct contact with Joseph Smith. Any information that she had would have been second or third or even fourth hand. There are a number of people at the time who hoped for, who believed, who wanted to believe that these were genuine plates. Among those were even Joseph Smith's personal scribe, William Clayton. Clayton actually wrote in Joseph Smith's journal, and you can now find it in the official history of the church, an account that purports to be from Joseph Smith, but it's not. It's William Clayton writing about how these six plates were found. The funny thing about the journal entry in Clayton's that sort of is an earmark that this is not personal firsthand information is that he talks about a 9-foot skeleton which was found with these Kinderhook plates. Well, there was no skeleton. Those who were actually there said that there were a few scraps of charred bone. Through the rumors and the discussions that went on, people had turned a few bone fragments into a giant 9-foot skeleton. The other fascinating part in this is sort of the bottom line on the Kinderhook plates, is that Joseph Smith took them, had them in his possession for 5 days, and never produced any translation of them. And in fact, only talked about doing so politely with an ancient lexicon that he had. Showing to me that he was polite, he was kind to those who thought they might be real, but in the end, he was not fooled. He did not purport to translate something that indeed was not real. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
With Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. If you're just joining us, during our last segment, we talked about the Kinderhook plates incident, which was kind of a bizarre incident in the annals of Mormon history. It happened in May, the very beginning of May, probably May 1st of 1843, at which time in Pike County, Illinois, a few Latter-day Saints were excavating a large Native American mound. And what happened was that during the night, some, at least one, but probably two or three others along with him, who were locals, decided they'd pull a prank on the Latter-day Saints, and they made six bell-shaped plates on which they made up some kind of phony characters and buried them 6 or 8 feet lower down in this mound, and then covered them back up and left and waited for the Latter-day Saints who were digging them to discover them, which they did. The plates were taken to Joseph Smith, who was very polite and said he would look at them, but who produced no translation. There were all kinds of rumors that the plates had been translated, which they were not, and that they had been found with a 9-foot skeleton of a man, which they were not. There were a few charred bones, but that's it. So there were a great deal of conceptions and misconceptions about the Kinderhook plates, but the bottom line is they were given to Joseph, who politely said that he would take a look at them, and he had them in his possession for 5 days and produced no translation, and that was it. How do we know that they were forgeries? Because modern day metallurgists have taken a look at the plates that still exist and have determined that they were from metal that was produced in the 1800s, not some kind of ancient metal. The next incident for today's discussion is the Zelph incident, which is quite fascinating. It happened during the summer of 1834 during the Zion's Camp March. The description that most people run across talking about the Zelph incident is from the official history of the church. And frankly, because editorial standards are different now, much more rigorous than they were then, there's some misunderstanding that can take place if you take a look. What you will see if you take a look at the Zelph incident is, in the official history of the church, is that Joseph Smith talks in his own first person about finding someone by the name of Zelph, the skeleton of Zelph, who was a white Lamanite, a man of God who was a warrior and chieftain under the great prophet Onondagas, who was known from the hill Cumorah in the east to the Rocky Mountains. He was killed in battle, and he was a prophet, according to many. Close quote. Now, what really happened is that Joseph Smith did not write any of what's attributed to him there. That came out of the diaries of several different individuals. Who are the individuals? Willard Richards. He says that this event happened in May and June of 1834. Heber C. Kimball's diary gives June 3rd as the date. George A. Smith, who was part of the group at Zion's Camp, says it was on June 2nd. There are two accounts, Levi Hancock's and Moses Martin's, that don't give us a date. And then there is Reuben McBride's, rounding out the six accounts, which says it was June 3rd. The place that's mentioned as the location where this incident happened, fascinatingly enough, is also Pike County, where 9 years later the Kinderhook Plates incident would take place. A little different location in Pike County, however. It was next to the Illinois River. And the description in one account in Wilford Woodruff's is that it was 300 feet above the river. Another description is that it was in a big mound. And the description of what was actually found also varies. One says that it was a skeleton of man. One says human bones. Several of them talk about arrows. And then there's the description of the actual person, which probably came from Joseph Smith himself and then was somewhat embellished or details added by others who were writing. Apparently, the person's name was Zelf. Four out of the six first-hand accounts mention Zelf. One of them does not specify who the person was, and the other one says a mighty prophet killed in battle. Three of the accounts say that it was a Lamanite, another that it was a Lamanite or Nephite, and two of them do not specify. One of them says that Joseph Smith had a vision, but the other five accounts do not say this. Three of the accounts say that this person, Zelf, was a great prophet known from the Atlantic to the Rocky Mountains. Now, interestingly enough, after the account was written out, from the east to the west was changed from the Atlantic to the Rocky Mountains was changed to say from the Hill Cumorah and the sea east to the Rocky Mountains. But that was not in the original descriptions, and that was certainly not something that we have any evidence that Joseph Smith actually said. And so that's the interesting part about this incident, is that it is sometimes used by believing Latter-day Saints to try to prove that the geography of the Book of Mormon all happened in North America, when in fact the portions of the description of the event that talk about the sea east and the Hill Cumorah were later additions. As a matter of fact, they were actually crossed out before they were put in the amalgamated diary. You know, there's a great article that talks about the conclusions that we really can make that was done some time ago by Kenneth Godfrey. He did a great job of analyzing this particular event in LDS history. He says that if the event happened today, we would need to specify to people that even though this is in Joseph Smith's biography, Joseph Smith himself did not write this. It was not an autobiography. But we don't know that because standards were different. We would know that there are different sources, and we would know how the sources differ, that some of them claimed that Zelf was a Lamanite leader and that he fought under a prophet named Onondagas, and that there were different descriptions that had different information about them. Now, one of the most fascinating parts to me about this whole incident is that apparently there really was at least part of a skeleton that was discovered. There really was an arrow that was found there, presumably that had killed the man, and that Joseph Smith made a statement about him either being a great warrior or a prophet. To me, that is quite fascinating indeed. But it does not tell us about where the Book of Mormon geography actually took place. Joseph Smith made other comments about the Yucatan Peninsula regarding that. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner.